Before they reached the foothills, Hilto and his squadron caught up with them. Hilto came forward to report to Merrin. "We killed 7 and took their horses," he said. "The rest would not stand to fight. I let them go rather than follow them. I could not be sure what enemy force might be coming up behind them."
"You did well, Hilto.
Shall I bring one of the captured horses for little Sududu to ride?"
"No, thank you. You've done enough for the present. She's quite safe where she is. I'm sure there'll be need for more horses when we catch up with Tinnat. Keep them until then."
As they climbed the track through the foothills towards the gap, they met the tail end of the long procession of refugees. Most were on foot, although those who were too sick or weak to walk were being pushed in two-wheeled handcarts or carried on litters by their families or comrades. Fathers had small children on their shoulders, and some of the women had infants strapped to their backs. Most recognized Merrin and called to him as he passed.
"The blessings of all the gods upon you, Merrin Cambyses! You have released us from bitter durance. Our children will be free."
The young girls they had released from the breeding pens ran beside Fen and Sududu, trying to touch them. Some were weeping with the strength of their emotion.
"You have saved us from the mountain of no return. We love you for your compassion and your courage. Thank you, Sududu. The blessings of all the gods on you, Fen."
None recognized Taita, although the women gazed with interest at the young man with the penetrating gaze and commanding presence as he rode by. Fen was acutely aware of their interest and moved closer to him in a proprietary fashion. With these lets and delays, their ascent of the hills was slow, and the sun was setting before they reached the crest and stood once again in the Kitangula Gap. Tinnat had seen them coming from the watchtower of the border fort. He clambered down the ladder and strode out through the gate to meet them. He saluted Merrin, embraced Fen and Sududu, then stared at Taita. "Who is this?" he asked.
"I do not trust him, for he is too pretty by a long way."
"You may trust him with your life," Merrin said. "The truth is that you already know him well. I will explain later, though it is not likely you will believe me when I do."
"You vouch for him, Colonel Merrin?"
"With all my heart," said Merrin.
"And with all of mine," said Fen.
"And mine," said Sududu.
"Mine also," said Hilto.
Tinnat shrugged and frowned. "I find myself in the minority, yet still I reserve my final judgment."
"Once again I am grateful to you, Colonel Tinnat," Taita said quietly,
"as I was at Tamafupa when you rescued us from the Basmara."
"You were not among those I found at Tamafupa," said Tinnat.
"Ah, you have forgotten,"
Taita shook his head.
"Then surely you recall escorting Merrin and me down from the Cloud Gardens after his eye surgery? That was the first time you revealed your true loyalty and your longing to return to our very Egypt. Do you recall how we discussed Eos and her powers?"
Tinnat stared at Taita, and his stern expression crumbled.
"Lord Taita? Magus? Did you not perish on the mountain in the Cloud Gardens? Surely this cannot be you."
"Most surely it can and is," Taita smiled, "although I admit to certain changes in my appearance."
"You have become a young man. It is a miracle that defies belief, yet your voice and eyes convince me that it is true."
He ran forward and took Taita's hand in a powerful grip.
"What has become of Eos and her oligarchs?"
"The oligarchs are dead, and Eos no longer threatens us. That is enough for now. How stand your present circumstances?"
"We surprised the Jarian garrison here. There were only 20 men, and none escaped. We threw their corpses into the gorge, see?
The vultures have already found them." Tinnat pointed up at the carrion birds circling in the sky above.
"I have sent 100 men to seize the boatyard at the headwaters of the Kitangula River and to secure the vessels lying there."
"You have done good work," Taita commended him. "Now you must go down to the boatyard and take command there. Assemble the vessels, and as our people arrive, embark them and send them down the river, with a good pilot to guide them. The whole flotilla will muster again on the shores of Lake Nalubale, at the place where we disembarked to hunt the beast with the nose horn."
"I remember it well."
"On your way down the mountain, leave a gang of 20 good axemen at the bridge over the gorge. They will cut down the bridge and let it drop into the gorge after the last of our people have passed over."
What will you do? Merrin and I will wait here at the fort with some of the men you sent with Hilto. We will delay the Jarian pursuit until the bridge is down.
As you command, Lord Taita.
Tinnat hurried away, shouting for his captains.
Taita turned back to Merrin. Send Hilto, the two Shaluk, and as many men as we can spare back down the path to give assistance to our refugees. They must hurry them. Look, the main Jarian army is not far behind us.
He pointed back down the mountain the way they had come up. In the distance, far out on the plain, they could see the dust clouds, as red as spilt blood in the setting sun, that the Jarian chariots and the marching legions had raised.
Taita took Fen with him to make a rapid inspection of the small fort and the defences in the throat of the gap, and he found them rudimentary, the walls low and in poor repair. However, the arsenal and the quartermaster's store were well stocked, as were the kitchen and larder.
"We will not hold the enemy here very long," he told Fen. "Speed is our best defence."
They gazed down at the straggling column of refugees. "They will need food and drink to give them strength to carry on. Find willing younger women to help you, and Sududu hand out food to them as they pass, whatever you can find, especially those with young children. Then send them on down the track to the boatyards. Keep them moving. Don't let them rest, or they will die here."
Merrin hurried back to join them. He and Taita climbed the ladder to the top of the watchtower. From there, Taita pointed out a ledge higher up the scree slope that overlooked the head of the path.
"Assemble all the men you can spare and take them up there. Tell them to gather large rocks and pile them on the ledge. We will roll them down onto the Jarians as they come up the path."
Merrin scrambled back down the ladder and went for his men, while Taita hastened to join Fen beside the path. While she selected women to prepare food, he picked out the able-bodied men and sent them to work with Merrin on the ledge. Gradually they made order from the confusion. The pace of the retreat quickened. With food and drink in their bellies, the people took new heart. As they passed him, Taita exchanged banter with the men and made weary women smile and hoist their infants higher on their shoulders. Everyone plodded on with renewed determination. As evening fell, the laughter of Fen's helpers sweetened the night, and the light of the torches that Hilto's rearguard carried marked the tail of the column.
"By the grace of Isis, it looks as though we shall get them all through," said Fen, as they picked out the tall figure of Hilto in the torchlight and heard his deep voice urging the column along.
Taita ran down to meet him.
"You have done well, good Hilto," he greeted him. "Have you seen the Jarian vanguard?"
"Nothing since sunset, when we made out their dust. But they cannot be far behind."
Hilto was carrying a young child on each shoulder, and his men were similarly burdened.
"Go on with all speed," Taita ordered, and ran on down the empty track until he was alone and the noise of the retreating column was muted by distance. He stopped to listen and heard a faint murmur below him. He fell to his knees and pressed his ear to the rock. The sound was sharper. "Chariots and marching men." He jumped to his feet.
"They're coming up fast."
He raced back to where Hilto was shepherding the tail of the column. Almost the last in the line was a woman with a child strapped to her back. She dragged two others behind her, snivelling and whining.
"I am tired. My feet are hurting. Can we rest now? Can we go home?"
"You are going home," Taita said, then picked up both children and settled them on his shoulders. "Hold tight," he told them, and reached out his free hand to the mother. "Come now. We shall soon have you at the top."
He strode on upwards, pulling the women after him.
"Here we are."
He set the children down as they reached the top of the pass.
"These two pretty girls will give you something good to eat."
He pushed them towards Fen and Sududu, then smiled at the mother, who was worn out and wan with worry.
"You will be safe now. I don't know who you are, but you are a good man."
He left them and went back to join Hilto. Together they saw the last of the refugees over the top of the pass and started them down the far side. By now dawn was breaking. Taita looked up to where Merrin stood on the ledge at the top of the scree slope. Merrin waved. His men crouched among the piles of loose rock they had gathered. "Go to the top of the watchtower," Taita ordered Fen and Sududu. "I will join you presently." For a moment it seemed that Fen might argue, but she turned away without a word. Soon Taita heard the chariot wheels grinding up towards the fort.
He walked a short way down the track to meet them, intending to divert the attention of the Jurians from Merin's men on the ledge above. Suddenly, the first vehicle appeared round the bend of the narrow track not far below him. As it climbed towards him, others appeared behind it. A dozen foot soldiers ran beside each vehicle, clinging to the sides as they were towed up the steep pathway. There were 8 chariots in all, and behind the last came a mass of infantry. Taita made no attempt to conceal himself, and a shout rang out from the leading chariot. The driver cracked his whip, and the chariot bounced over the rough surface as it speeded up. Taita did not move. A spearman hurled a javelin at him, but Taita did not flinch. He watched the weapon fall 5 or 6 paces short of where he stood and clatter on the rocks. He let them come on again. The next javelin might have hit him, but he dodged aside and it flew past his shoulder. He heard Fenn cry from the tower, "Come back, Taita! You are placing yourself at hazard!" He ignored her warning and watched the chariots. At last they were all fully committed. There was no space for them to turn and flee. He waved up at Merin. "Now!" he shouted, and the echoes flung his voice along the cliffs. "Now! Now! Now!" Merin's men bent to the task. The first rocks rolled over the ledge and bounced down the steep slope. They loosened others and set off a rumbling rock slide. The charioteers heard it coming, and with startled cries abandoned their vehicles and ran for safety. But there was no shelter in the narrow pass from the tide of rock. It crashed into the stranded chariots, sweeping them and the men off the path and into the gorge below. When the rock stopped sliding, the track was blocked with piles of debris. "No chariots will be able to use that road for a while, and even men on foot will have difficulty getting over these obstacles," Taita said to himself with satisfaction. "It should hold them for the rest of the morning." He signalled Merin to bring his men down to the fort. By the time he had climbed to the top of the tower, the last of the refugees had long disappeared down the track on the reverse slope. Fenn was so relieved to see him that she embraced him fiercely. "You are very dear to me, my lord," she whispered. "My heart stops beating when I see javelins flying about your head." "If you have such high regard for me, then the least you should do is feed me before the rest of the Jurian army arrives." "You have become so masterful since you returned from the mountain. It pleases me, my lord." She laughed and disappeared to the kitchens. When she returned, they leant on the parapet and ate eggs with durra cake. They watched the Jurian commander send a detachment of 50 men up the slope to seize the ledge from which Merin and his men had hurled the rocks. He was standing in the middle of the track, just out of long bowshot below them. He was tall and lean, and wore the ostrich plumes of a colonel on the crest of his helmet. "I don't like the look of him in the least," Taita remarked. The man had swarthy features, a hard, jutting chin, and a large, hooked nose. "Do you recognize him, Sududu?" "I do, Magus. He is a hard and merciless man, hated by us all." "His name?" "Colonel Soklosh." "Colonel Snake," Taita translated. "He bears more than a passing resemblance to his namesake." As soon as he had control of the ledge, Soklosh sent his skirmishers forward to clear the rock-strewn path before the fort and to test the mettle of the defenders. "Send them a few arrows," Taita told Fenn. Quickly, the two girls unslung their bows. Sududu's arrow passed so close over the head of one Jurian that he ducked and ran. Fenn hit another in the calf. He hopped about on the uninjured leg, howling like a wolf, until his comrades held him down and snapped off the arrow shaft short. Then they retreated down the track, 2 supporting the wounded man between them. After that there was a long pause before a dense phalanx of armoured men jogged around the bend and came up the track towards the fort. "I think it is time for me to go down," said Merin, and slid from the ladder to the parapet. As the next wave of enemy infantry came into bowshot range, he called to Hilto, "Stand by!" "Massed volleys," Hilto called. His men sheathed their swords and unslung their bows. "Level! Take aim! Let fly!" The volley of arrows rose against the early morning sky, dark as a swarm of locusts. It fell upon the Jurians, the arrowheads clattering on bronze armour, A few went down, but the others closed ranks, lifted their shields over their heads to form a canopy, and came on at a trot. Again and again Hilto's men fired their volleys, but under the canopy of shields the Jarians were undeterred. They reached the foot of the wall. The front rank braced themselves against the stonework, and the second clambered onto their shoulders to form a pyramid. The third rank used them as a ladder to reach the top of the wall. Hilto's men hurled them back, hacking with swords and thrusting with spears. Others climbed up in their place, blades clanging and rasping against each other. Men shouted, cursed, and screamed in pain. A small group of Jarians forced their way onto the parapet, but before they could exploit their advantage, Meron, Nokontu, and Imbali fell upon them. They cut down most and shoved the rest off the top. On the tower, Fen and Sidudu stood at each side of Taita, choosing their targets with care, picking off the Jarian captains as they tried to regroup their men at the base of the wall. When the assault faltered and failed, their arrows hastened the Jarians back down the track. The enemy left their dead at the base of the wall, but dragged the wounded away with them. Soklosh launched two more attacks before noon. Meron's men beat back the first as readily as they had the chariots. However, in the next, the Jarians came in three separate detachments, carrying with them hastily constructed assault ladders. Simultaneously, they struck at both ends of the wall and in the centre. The defenders were already thinly stretched. But now Meron was forced to split them into even smaller units to meet the triple-pronged attack. It was desperate fighting, and Taita climbed down to join in. He left the girls in the tower with bundles of arrows they had found in the arsenal. For the rest of the morning the battle raged at the top of the wall. When at last they had thrown back the Jarians, Meron's men were in poor shape. They had lost 12 men killed, and another 10 were too badly wounded to carry on the fight. Most of the others were at least lightly wounded, and all were close to exhaustion. From down the track they heard Soklosh and his captains shouting commands as they mustered a fresh attack. "I doubt we can hold them much longer," Meron glanced along the parapet at his men, who sat in small groups, drinking from the water skins that Fen and Sidudu had brought them, sharpening their chipped and blunted blades, binding their wounds, or simply resting, their faces blank and eyes dull. "Are you ready to set fire to the buildings?" Taita asked. "The torches are already burning," Meron affirmed. "Only the foundations of the wall were of stone. Everything else, including the main building and watchtower, was built of timber. The wood was old and desiccated and would burn readily. The conflagration would seal off the head of the pass until the flames subsided sufficiently to allow the Jarians through." Taita left Meron and went to the far end of the parapet. He crouched in a corner and pulled his cloak over his head. The men watched him curiously. "What is he doing?" asked one. "He is sleeping," answered another. "He is a religious man. He is praying." "We need his prayers," remarked a fourth. Fen knew what he was attempting, and stood close to him, screening him with her own body and adding her psychic force to his. After such fierce fighting, it took much effort for Taita to compose himself, but at last he broke free of his body and his astral self soared above the mountain peaks. He overlooked the battlefield and saw the massed Jarian army, 3,000 men or more, thronging the track from the plain. He saw the next assault forming just below the fort, but still out of sight of the walls. Then he passed over the mountain tops and looked down to the Katangula River and the distant blue of the lake. He saw Tinat's men in the boatyards at the head of the river. They had overpowered the garrison and were assembling and launching the boats down the slipways into the swift flow of the river. Already the first refugees were embarking and the men were taking their places on the rowing benches. But hundreds more were still trudging down the mountain path. He sank closer to earth and hung above the deep gorge that split the flank of the mountain. The suspension bridge that crossed it seemed tiny and insubstantial against the massif of grey rock. The last of the refugees were venturing out onto its frail timbers to make the perilous transit of the gorge. Tinat's men were helping the weak and elderly, and his axemen stood ready to cut away the bridge pylons and let the timbers fall into the dark void beneath. Taita jerked back and swiftly regained full control of his body, then uncovered his head and sprang to his feet.
"'What did you discover, Taita?' Fenn asked quietly.
"'Most of our people have crossed the gorge,' he replied. "'If we leave the fort now, the rest should be over the bridge by the time we get down to them. "'Fenn, you and Sududu will make ready the horses.'
"'He left her to it and strode down the parapet to Merin. "'Rally the men, set fire to the walls, and take to the path before the next Jarian attack develops.'
The men's spirits rose when they understood that the fight was over. Within a short time they were marching out of the rear gates of the fort in tight order, carrying their weapons and the wounded. Taita stayed back to supervise the lighting of the fires. The Jarian garrison had used rushes as a floor covering and sleeping mats. Now they were stacked along the base of the walls. Meren's men had sprinkled them liberally with lamp oil from the quartermaster's stores. When the lighted torches were thrown on them, the flames shot up immediately. The wooden walls caught fire with such ferocity that Taita and the torchmen were forced to run for the gates. Fenn was already mounted on Whirlwind, holding Windsmoke for him to mount. They trotted down the track together, following the last platoon, which was headed by Merin and Hilto. When they reached the suspension bridge, they were dismayed to find that at least 100 refugees had still to make the crossing. Merin forced his way through the throng to find out the reason for the delay. 5 old but vociferous women were refusing to venture out onto the narrow planks that crossed the deep gorge. They were lying flat in the middle of the path, screaming with terror and kicking anyone who came near them.
"You want us to die!" they howled. "Leave us here, let the Jarians kill us, rather than throw us into the pit."
Their terror was contagious. Those coming up behind them were hanging back now and holding up the rest of the column. Merin seized the ringleader round the waist and threw her over one shoulder. "Come now!" She tried to scratch his face and bite his ear, but her crooked black teeth made no impression on the bronze visor of his helmet. He ran with her onto the narrow way, the planking trembling beneath them, the drop on each side seeming bottomless. The old woman wailed with fresh voice, and Merin realized suddenly that his back was wet. He roared with laughter.
"It has been hot work. Thank you for cooling me."
He reached the far side and set her down. She made one last effort to claw out his eyes, then collapsed in a whimpering heap on the path. He left her and ran back to pick up the others. But Hilto and 3 of his men were already coming across the gorge, each with an old woman struggling and screaming on his back. Behind them the traffic was flowing once more over the bridge. However, the delay had cost them dear. Merin pushed his way back through the throng until he found Taita at the tail of the column.
"The flames at the fort will not hold Soklosh much longer. He'll be on us again before we can get them all across. We dare not begin to cut away the supports until the very last of our people is over," he told Taita.
3 men could hold an army on this narrow path," Taita said.
"Hilto and we too?"
Merin stared at him. "By the festering sores on Seth's buttocks, Magus, I had forgotten how things have changed. You now have the strongest and craftiest sword arm of any."
"This day we shall have a chance to put that statement to the test," Taita assured him. "But make certain that we have good stout fellows behind us to fill the gap if one of us should fall."
There were still 50 or more refugees waiting their turn to cross the bridge when they heard Soklosh's men behind them, the tramp of their feet, the rattle of their weapons on shield and scabbard. Taita, Merin, and Hilto took up station shoulder to shoulder across the path. Taita was in the centre with Hilto on his left and Merin on the outer verge, with the cliff face dropping away below him. Nakontu and 10 picked men waited behind them, ready to jump forward if they were needed. A little further down the track, Fenn and Sududu sat their horses, holding Taita's and Merin's on lead reins. They had unslung their bows and had them at the ready. Sitting high on their saddles, they had a clear view over the heads of Taita and the others. The foremost rank of the Jarian Brigade came round the bend in the pathway and halted abruptly when they saw the 3 men confronting them. The ranks following bunched up behind them, and there was momentary confusion until they had recovered their formation. Then they stared in silence at the 3 defenders. It lasted only as long as it took the Jarians to realize the strength of the opposition. Then the burly sergeant in the leading rank
pointed at them with his sword, threw back his head and bellowed with laughter.
"Ha! 3 against 3,000? Ha!"
He choked with laughter.
"Oh, I'm dirtying myself with fright."
He began to thump the blade of his sword against his shield. The men around him took up the beat, a menacing staccato rhythm. The Jarians came on, stamping and banging their shields. Fen watched them over the fletching of the arrow she held at full draw. Just before the Jarians launched themselves into the attack, she whispered from the side of her mouth, without taking her eye or aim from the face of the bearded sergeant that showed over the top of his shield. "I have the one in the middle. You take the one on your side." "I have him in my eye," Sududu murmured. "Shoot him," Fen snapped, and they let fly together. The two arrows fluted over Taita's head. One took the Jarian sergeant cleanly in the eye. He went over backwards, and his armoured weight crashed into the two men behind him, bringing them down. Sududu's shot hit the man beside him in the mouth. Two of his teeth snapped off, and the arrowhead buried itself in the back of his throat. The troopers behind them shouted with anger, jumped over the corpses, and rushed upon Taita and his two companions. Both sides were now so closely engaged that the girls dared not fire another arrow for fear of hitting their own. However, only 3 Jarians at a time could reach the head of the line. Taita ducked under the blow of the man who came at him, and with a low sweep of the blade cut his legs out from under him. As he dropped, Taita sent a thrust through the lacing of his breastplate into his heart. Hilto parried the blade of his man, then killed him with his riposte, which flew through the gap below the visor of his helmet. The 3 squared up and retreated 2 paces. 3 more Jarians jumped over their dead comrades and rushed at them. 1 struck at Meron, who parried, seized his opponent's sword wrist, and swung him out over the edge of the cliff, to fall shrieking to the rocks far below. The man who came next at Taita lifted his sword with both hands and aimed at his head, as though he were cutting firewood. Taita caught the blow on his blade, then stepped up close and drove the dagger he held in his left hand into the fellow's belly, and pushed him staggering back into his own ranks. Meron maimed another, and as he was falling, kicked him in the head to send him reeling backwards over the cliff. Hilto split the helmet of the next Jarian with a blow that cut through the bronze crest and went on deeply into his skull. The force of the blow was more than the blade could withstand. It snapped off short and left Hilto with the hilt. "A sword! Give me a fresh sword!" he shouted desperately. But before those behind him could pass it to him, he was attacked again. Hilto hurled the hilt at the face of the Jarian, but he ducked and deflected it with the visor of his helmet as he thrust at Hilto. The blow went home, but Hilto seized him round the waist in a bear hug and dragged him back into his own lines. The men behind him killed the Jarian as he struggled to free himself from Hilto's grip. But Hilto was hard hit and would fight no more that day. He leant heavily on the comrade who led him back to the bridge, and Nkontu stepped into his place in the line beside Taita. He had a stabbing spear in each hand and wielded them with such speed and dexterity that the bronze heads merged into a blur of dancing light. Leaving a trail of dead and dying Jarians on the pathway, the 3 backed away towards the bridgehead, matching the pace of their retreat to that of the tail end of the refugee column. At last Fen shouted, "They are all across!" Her ringing tones carried clearly above the din of the battle. Taita killed the man he was fighting with a parry and riposte to the throat before he glanced back. The bridge was clear. "Order the axeman to lay on with a will. Bring down the bridge," he called to Fen, and heard her repeat the order as he turned back to meet the next enemy. Over their heads he could see the ostrich plumes in the crest of Soklosh's helmet and heard his harsh cries urging on his men. But the Jarians had seen the slaughter of their comrades, and the ground under their feet was red and muddy with blood. The track was cluttered with corpses, and their ardour was waning. Taita had time enough to look back again. He could hear the thudding of the axes on the guy lines and the bridge timbers. However, the 2 mounted girls had not yet crossed the gorge. With them, a small group of men stood ready to fill any gap in the line. "Go back!" Taita shouted at them. "All of you, go back!"
They hesitated, reluctant to leave so few to face the foe.
"Go back, I tell you! You can do no more here! Back!" roared Merrin. "Give us space! When we come it will be fast!"
The girls swung the horses round, and their hooves clattered on the planks of the bridge. The other men followed them across the gorge and reached the far side. Nakonto, Merrin, and Taita, still facing the Jarian host, hacked slowly out onto the bridge and took their stand in the centre, with the deep drop on either side. The cliffs resounded to the thudding of axes as men hacked away at the main supports. Three of the enemy rushed out onto the bridge. The planking trembled under their tread. They clashed their shields against those of the three in the centre. Hacking and thrusting, both sides balanced on the swaying catwalk. When the first Jarian rank was cut down, others ran out to take their places, slipping in the blood puddles and tripping over the corpses of their comrades. Others crowded out onto the narrow bridge behind them. Blades clanged on blades. Men fell, then slithered off the sides of the bridge and dropped wailing into the void. All the time the axe strokes boomed against the timbers, and shouts started the echoes anew. Suddenly, the bridge shuddered, like a dog trying to shake off its fleas. One side dropped and hung askew. 20 Jarians were hurled screaming into the gorge. Taita and Merrin fell to their knees to keep their balance on the swaying deck. Only Nakontu stayed upright. "Come back, Taita!" Fen cried. And all those round her took up the cry. "Come back! The bridge goes down! Come back!" "Back!" Taita roared at Merrin, who jumped up and ran, balancing like an acrobat. "Go back!" he ordered Nakontu. But the Shaluk's eyes were glazed red with battle lust. They were fixed upon the enemy, and he did not seem to hear Taita's voice. Taita hit him a resounding blow across the back with the flat of his sword. "Get back! The fighting is over!" He seized his arm and thrust him towards the far end. Nakontu shook his head as though waking from a trance and ran after Merrin. Taita followed a few yards behind him. Merrin reached the end of the bridge and sprang onto the rocky path, but at that moment there was a crack like a whiplash as one of the main guy ropes that held the bridge parted. The catwalk heaved and sagged at a sharper angle before it caught again. Those Jarians who still had a footing could no longer maintain it. One after another they slid towards the edge and dropped off. Nakonto reached solid ground a moment before the bridge sagged again. Taita was still on it when it tilted violently. He slid towards the edge and, to save himself, flung aside his sword and threw himself flat. There were narrow gaps between the lashings of the planking. Clawing with hooked fingers, he found a handhold. The bridge shuddered again and fell until it hung vertically down the cliff face. Taita's feet dangled over the gorge as he hung on by his fingertips. He groped for a foothold, but the toes of his sandals were too bulky to squeeze into the narrow gaps in the planking. He drew himself up by the main strength of his arms. An arrow thumped into the plank closest to his head. The Jarians on the opposite side of the gorge were shooting at him, and he could not defend himself. He drew himself up hand over hand. Each time he changed his grip, he hung on one hand and groped with the other for the planking above. The bridge was twisted so that each successive gap between the planks was narrower than the preceding one. At last he reached a point where he could not force his fingers into the next opening and hung there helplessly. The next arrow struck so close that it pegged the skirt of his tunic to the wood. "Taita!" It was Fen's voice, and he craned his neck to look up. Her face was 10 feet above him. She was lying on her stomach, peering over the edge. "Oh, sweet Isis, I thought you had fallen." Her voice trembled. "Hold hard for just a little longer." She was gone. Another arrow thumped into the timbers close to his left ear. "Here, take hold of this!" The looped end of a halter rope dropped beside him. He reached for it with one hand and slipped it over his head, then worked the bite of the loop under his armpit. "Are you ready?" Fen's eyes were huge with fear. "The other end is knotted to Whirlwind's saddle. We will pull you up." Her head disappeared again.
With a jerk, the rope came up tight. As he went up, he fended himself off the dangling bridge with his feet and hands. More arrows slammed into the timbers, but although he could hear the Jarians clamouring for his blood, like a pack of dogs beneath a treed leopard, not one of their arrows touched him. As he came level with the path, the strong hands of Merin and Nakontu reached out to haul him to safety. He regained his feet, and Fen dropped Whirlwind's reins to run back to him. She embraced him silently, with tears of relief streaming down her cheeks.